Welcome to Dentology, the Business of Dentistry podcast. In this podcast, we delve into the non-clinical aspects of dentistry with inspirational guests from across the profession. You will hear incredible life stories, pick up valuable business tips, and be entertained. I'm Andy Acton, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Drevens.
When you get to chat to your mates, it's nice, isn't it?
It's good fun, really, because it's not hard work at all. It's not really working.
No. So lovely to get an update from Shaz. And my goodness, from when we started talking to him for our first episode back in July 21, and he mentioned Wells on Wheels, and it was quite early days then, to see where we are now with a documentary about to be released on one of the big network channels in the UK.
I mean, I'm looking forward to the documentary because, one, it's a very interesting topic, and two, the fact it's our friend.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's that sort of double whammy, really.
And also those insights he gave to how that story is going to be told and how there is going to be hope.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating.
It's been split between filming in the UK and India.
We didn't ask him how long it was. I wonder how long it is. Half an hour? An hour?
Yeah, I don't know if he can get control. I'd imagine it'd probably be an hour or something
like that. But no, it would be really fascinating.
Really good, really enjoyable. We are going to add some notes into this episode if people want to find out about more of Wells.
How to make a donation.
Yeah, exactly. They can do that.
Claim it off your tax.
And if you like this episode or you're interested in Dentology, the business of dentistry generally, please do subscribe. We'd be ever so grateful. And if you want to share this episode with a friend or someone you know, that would be amazing as well.
Even better.
Cheers. It's always special when you get friends back, isn't it?
It is.
Your friends.
It's very enjoyable. It's like having a chat down the pub or the coffee shop, depending on your suasion.
It is.
Quite easier as well, isn't it?
Exactly. So today, we are so pleased. A friend is back to join us. We've got the founder of Digimax, the world's number one dental marketing agency. The author of Instagram for Dentists, now in its second edition.
And it's thicker. Those of you who've seen it, it's much thicker than it was before. Holding doors open.
And an Amazon bestseller, don't you know?
Well, who loves an Amazon bestseller?
But today, the important part of this person is the founder of Wells on Wheels, a water wheel charity project. So welcome, Shaz Memon. How are you?
Hello. I'm very well. Thank you for having me back again. I feel extremely honoured. Good to be back.
It is. It's lovely to have you. And
good cause.
It is. And it's lovely because you are an inaugural guest. When we started Dentology, the podcast, back in July 2021, and we're not far off 100
years ago.
We didn't really know where it was going. We knew we wanted to meet certain objectives. Our objectives were: we wanted to hear life stories. We wanted to share some business tips. We wanted to just have fun. And you were there recently with us when we did our live event with Millard, the Dentology live event. Who'd have thought that in less than 2 years we'd have gone from having nothing to starting with you to then running that event? So it's been really cool.
It's amazing for me to see, because you get approached by people starting podcasts all the time, but very few people stick to it and are consistent. And I think recently you shared with me, what was it, number one business podcast in the world?
Top 5%. Yeah, business podcast in the world. Going to get T-shirts printed, everything, Shaz.
And within dentistry, what I love about your podcast, it's not the, blow your own trumpet show. It's quite genuine, and you get quite unique guests on there as well. And your event most recently, I mean, like I messaged you and I wrote to you on Facebook. None of us knew it's going to turn out like that. It's such a unique concept to be in a live podcast recording with that setup, the venue, the people that were there. So I think you guys are very good at getting the right people in one room, except for one or two, of course. But yeah.
you shall remain.
You've always got to invite those people. Yeah, we must apologize on behalf of those.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, it's gone well. And fairly recently, we also spoke to Bavin and Meg Batt, who are also ambassadors of Wells on Wheels, and they spent a period of time over sort of December through into the new year, basically trekking their adventure to deliver some water wheels, and we did a recording on that, and it was great to get their story and not only how it impacted them but how it impacted their kids. And I know they're looking to try to go back, but that as a soundbite of what happened was great, but we thought it would be really nice to chat to you today just to get a wider perspective on where Wells on Wheels is at, how's the project going, what impact's it having. So perhaps just as a starter, could you kind of just set the scene for some people that don't know about Wells on Wheels and what it is,
aren't aware of
what it is and what you set out
when it started, all that sort of stuff.
Sure.
Potted history.
So I started Wells and Wheels in 2019. And Andy, if you remember, we were meeting, me, you, Chris, Harry Patel from Ice Connect, we were meeting up. And we were sitting outside a pub just for a moment before we got our reservation. I think it was in Marylebone. We're going to eat at Trishnan. I said to you, Andy, this is what I'm going to start. What do you think? And you're like, amazing. And it's a bit like your podcast. You know, it started with this idea. And the idea was, still in 2023, girls every day get up in the morning, young girls, and they are going to a well to collect water. So instead of turning the tap on, their process before that tap thing and getting access to water is walking many miles in the heat. So you carry these pots and then you carry them back. So they're like heavy suitcases. Imagine that, carrying that. And to save time, they'll sometimes stack one or two above their head. Now, I mean, we couldn't do it, right? But with enough practice for years, you can do it. And really what they're doing is they're compressing their spine. The big thing is, aside from the obvious physical issues, is they're not attending school. So the Indian government have put schools, NGOs have put schools in these villages. The attendance is just boys. So these girls cannot access school because they cannot access water. And when I first set out to solve this issue through an invention of some kind, which meant more water could be transported from A to B, without it having a physical burden, and it also meant one person could go, which is mum, it would hopefully mean that the girls could be free to enjoy their childhood. That was the initial idea. So girls don't need to go. I didn't know the education element at all. The education element kind of presented itself to me as a byproduct, which I was like, what? So these girls are now going to school with their spare time. And as I got to know, every village we did this in, because these Indian girls are so ambitious, they love studying. The focus then became, actually, this is water and education. We're solving an education problem, not just a childhood problem. And it all came quite naturally to me, actually, because I got softened up when I had a daughter. So Helene is six now, and 2019, she's a little bit younger. But it just made me, I was a bit ashamed of myself that I felt, you know, being a parent meant only mollycoddling this one individual. What about all the forgotten children of the world? So really, yeah, that's the insight into how it all started.
That's a lovely story. Lovely story. And are there any kind of standout moments for you? I know when we spoke to Bambin and Meg, and they told us their story of going to... Are there
motorbikes breaking down?
Yeah, just...
Wow.
They said that they got so far on their journey in vehicles they couldn't get there.
So the car breakdown. Yeah, and then I think it was you, didn't you? Managed to organize.
I'm coordinating it from here.
Yeah. So
this village is in middle of nowhere. If you're coming from this side, it's like dead end. You cannot get there. If you're coming from this side where my team are coming from, it's not like the M25, all right, just take the next junction. It's either you can get there or you can't get there. So they're obviously getting frustrated and worried. They got children in the car and they're like, we can't get to this place. We can't see it. It's just rocks. So luckily I could get into contact with my team because sometimes they're completely cut off and we don't have satellite phones or any of that. Luckily,
it's like the US military.
And, they sent motorbikes to where they were. Luckily they could find them, and they brought them to the village. And what's fascinating is every village, even though the setup is usually the same, it's rural, disconnected, children are collecting water. That's the commonality. What's not common is how you access it. Sometimes we've got to villages from tractors. Sometimes they've walked 6 miles and got to middle of nowhere because they've been walking in the wrong direction. Every situation when it comes to wheel deliveries has been so different, and I was so ignorant to this in the beginning because I would put pressure on the team over there. Why aren't we doing 4 deliveries a week? Why is it only 2? Excuse me. And they said, Shaz, you don't understand. You cannot get there, and it's 40 degrees heat. But I wasn't having it, and it's only now, like when Bavin went and he explained it in his way. Like, you know, it's different. There's a language barrier as well, right? So to me, sometimes it sounds like they're not trying hard enough. that I would give them motivational talks. You can achieve anything if you put your mind to it. Is that? But they're like, physically, we can't get there. So when Bavin shared his story of him going with his children, how disconnected this village was, how his children said, this, they're going to remember this forever. For the first time, they really appreciate the benefits that they have living in England, in a privileged society. Even that's brand new to me, because I've never took my daughter there. I've never taken my family there. So their visit and how Bavin articulated it and how giving he was to give up his Christmas holidays with his wife and family really was heart-wrenching when I heard some of the stories. But it all had a happy ending. This village, the girls in this village no longer have to collect water.
And is there a particular story that stands out for you of any particular girl or village or family that's been affected? Because you've obviously impacted, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of people and lives. Is the risk that kind of they just kind of blend into people that need help as opposed to certain people kind of standing out?
Yeah.
It's so amazing. I mean, there is one which happened recently. It was during the filming of, I know we're going to get to this, the documentary that we're producing for Amazon Prime, No Waterland. And the film crew was in this village for 3 days. And they're just, they're disconnected from the charity. They only know about charity from me. So they're going there. They're experiencing it for the first time. These are city dwellers, right? They have all the mod cons. Even to them, this is like something you read about, because why are they ever going to see it? It's so far away. It's a bit like when Londoners go to Birmingham, you know, we don't quite get it.
We must apologise for our middle distance. Yes.
Yeah. Like Birmingham's a lovely city.
We've come a long way. There was one incident where Soam, the director, called me and he said, Shaz, there's these two sisters here and I know you just want to cover the young girls, but there's these two sisters here, they're 80 years old. And they asked us, what are we doing? And we said to them, look, we're filming about water collection. And it's at that point they shared that actually we've been collecting water since we were young girls. Only now that we physically can't do that journey, are we retiring from water collection? And he asked them, what else have you done? They said, look, we've been wives and mothers, but our role has been collect water. And they said, since we've been little girls, we've been walking down this path together. And it's just so heartbreaking. And we've got it on video. We've got it in No Waterland. And I said, I absolutely want to cover that, because it's such a poignant reminder that a whole lifetime can go collecting water. It's just so ridiculous. So for me, it was saddening and eye-opening, because you never really think that far beyond, right? And they were there live telling us that this has been our whole life. And in a way, two lives wasted.
Yeah, a sole purpose was to collect water.
Yeah, it's, and like you say, we try and think what that must be like, but you have no comprehension walking up and down a path to the same well or different wells to collect water for the most of your life. Yeah, that's your purpose.
I also think people forget, don't they, how heavy water is. You know, it's only when you sort of pick up 5 liters or 10 liters and you go, ooh,
yeah,
that's actually quite heavy.
Yeah,
that you've then got to put in your head and then walk in 40 degree heat for, I don't know, 5 miles, 6 miles, whatever it might be, there and back. You know, it's just mad, isn't it?
And this is actually, you're absolutely right, Chris. This is the reason why I wanted to create this film, so we can see it. You know, we don't need to fly there. We can see it. And there's scenes in the film, in the documentary, where the young girls, I think she's 12 years old. She puts a pot on her head. And there's a moment where you just see her face go, it's really being strong.
Like when you lift a heavy weight, that moment when it dawns on you what you've got.
Exactly. And especially if you're a parent, right, you can appreciate how painful that might be to see someone so young doing that. So I've tried to show people through the documentary, so it's not just an idea about people that we're never going to see. There's so much poverty around the world. I want people to really be able to feel what they're going through.
And where did the idea come from? This, because it's the documentary called No Waterland, and as you say, it's going out on Amazon Prime later on this year. Where did the idea come from here? And what were the challenges that you faced in trying to put together a project like this? Because you know, you live in the UK, you've got a great network, but trying to liaise with people who are filming remotely in India, and I know there was a UK end to it, how complex was it as a project?
It's probably one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. No experience, nothing about the film industry. You don't know how things are produced. You don't know how they're costed. You don't know the areas in which you need to go. Where are you going to film? Are you going to find families? What permissions do you need? It's been the most challenging thing I've ever had to do. And I relate it back to my olden days when I used to design, right? And when the family would come to me and they said, Shaz, we want you to design our wedding invites, it would be so difficult because so much personal passion is involved. It's such a personal thing. And this project was equally difficult because it wasn't about producing a piece of work that's going to make money. It was about me trying to share to the world, especially in the UK, because an Indian film director doesn't have the same lens that I do in the UK. So I know what he's filming is going to have a different reaction over here that I want. So coordinating that, writing it, rewriting the subtitles in British English, it's been the hardest thing. And you know how we work in timelines, you give a date and you stick to it here. It's very normal. You know, Indian timing, you really get to understand what that is as well. So the challenge
is it quite loose?
Extremely. there was a situation where I was given a date. And I turned up, you know, I got my Zoom ready. I was in Turkey on holiday and I got my laptop thinking I'm going to be presented X, Y, Z, you know, what we discussed. And he said to me, look, you're trying to produce something amazing here. You can't just rush it. I said, no, you've given me a date. I'm here. And it was another month from there. So accepting delays will happen and it messes your schedule up. So I'm happy to say there is light at the end of the tunnel. And I feel hopefully when you watch it and the world watches it, they get to see that all that effort that goes into creating something like this is absolutely worth it. Some of the cinematography is spectacular. They've really done a good job, but it's hardest thing I've ever done.
Brilliant. And is it, without giving too much away, the risk is something like this. It could be quite desperate. It could be quite depressing. It exposes a world that we're just not familiar to. But your whole outlook and demeanor is it's about hope. It's about giving people hope. So is it got a blend of is it uplifting as well, in that we see stories of where lives have been materially changed for the good, as well as highlighting the difficult situation they're in?
Absolutely. Look, no one likes a sad film. No one likes a sad ending. It's all about hope.
Titanic.
Yeah. That's true. That's a good example. It's entirely about hope. Now, what we do is we're sharing the problem on camera, live. We've recorded it all exactly how it is. So it's been documented. We're sharing it, but in a nice way where you can really get into the stories of these individual girls that we interview. And it's a story of two girls in two completely different villages living the same life. They both have dreams. They're both young. They're both smart, but they're collecting water all day. And we're trying to show the world that this is two girls in two different villages, but there's hundreds of thousands of girls like this doing the same thing. So we do share what work the WOW has done. And we do ask the girls, you know, what are you doing now? There is an ending where the girls get to pursue a career in the fields that they dream of because of the water wheel. So it's not all doom and gloom, you know, it's quite uplifting.
You have to show the reality, don't you? That's the thing, isn't it? It's almost showing the reality, it might not make it depressing, if you know what I mean. It's sort of tricky balance to get, isn't it?
Yeah, it is very, I mean, when they film so much footage, and you know, as owners of FTA Media, there's, especially when you're making a film, they're not missing anything. There's like 20 people in the film crew, so much footage, and there's so many devastating moments in that footage where people are falling over, they're hurting themselves, there's arguments in the home, they've got no food one day, something, there's all these catastrophic things happening, but we've got to stick to what we're reporting. So the director said, look, why don't we put this in? Why don't we put that in? It shows real life. I was like, it's got to have a clear focus. It
turns into an 8-hour documentary, doesn't it? If you're not careful.
People in the UK switch off. It's just so confusing to see so much pain. Right, we're not used to it, right? Our biggest pain point could be a flat tire, and to us, that's the end of the world. But, so yeah, it is a fine balance, and we were careful about this.
This episode is brought to you with our charity partner, Wells on Wheels. Did you know that many girls in Indian villages miss out on education because they have to spend hours fetching water for their families? Wells on Wheels is changing that with the water wheel invention. A water wheel is a rollable drum that can carry 5 times as much water as a single bucket, making it easier for adults to collect more water in a single trip without risking injury and freeing up young girls from never having to collect water again. With the help of Wells on Wheels, over 2,000 girls are now attending school regularly. Join the cause and help the lives of ambitious girls today. For just £28, a water wheel can transform their futures immediately. Learn more and donate at wellsonwheels.co.uk. Now back to the episode.
It's hard, isn't it? I was reading an article yesterday, and it was about another documentary, but it was a film. And there's a film called The Bridge Too Far, which you young people may never have heard of. But anyway, the film is, I think, about 2.5 hours long. But they said they filmed the equivalent of 500 hours.
Wow.
To produce that, you know, and it's the same sort of things that you've got to find that balance of what do you put in and what don't you put in, and does it tell the story? Does it relate to the stories? You know, it's not just the filming; it's all the other bits that go with the editing to produce a spellbinding watch, really. Because as you say, Shaz, people just switch off, don't they? Because it's sort of like water, turn a tap.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's a bit like the Oxfam adverts. At some point, you get desensitized seeing something. Yeah. You know, so it was a fine balance. And I think one of the keys for this to be a successful project for me, because I'm really happy where it is right now, was when I was holding interviews with the directors. You know, when you share something quite sad with someone and you can see their face twitch or change because you've really, like, they've really absorbed the story. And I interviewed 3 directors, and each of them had a different visual response. You know, I was going with a lot of gut here, and also their questions. So some of them were just purely black and white. How long do you want it to be? Where do you want it to be? How's it going to happen? And this director was like, oh, this happened. So what, they can't go to school? Oh, man, I can't imagine. You know, my niece, she's this age. And
he got the soft stuff.
So the soft stuff. So when he was asking me questions, I was like, this director is going to actually bother to tell the story as it is, rather than just deliver a piece of work which might not connect and might be something that I don't even release.
You were saying before,
exciting.
Yeah, it is.
It's exciting. I'm looking forward to watching it.
Yeah, exactly. Me too. You were saying about your daughter, and, you know, kind of the driver behind why you were doing it, and obviously she's getting older, as we all are. Now she's a bit older. Is she starting to understand and learn more about it from her own point of view as well, in that how her upbringing in the UK is so materially different from, I don't know, say, Hedpada village in India, what her life would have been if she'd have been born in a village like that as opposed to in the UK. Is that starting to dawn on her yet, or she's still a bit young?
Yeah, absolutely. Now that she's 6 years old and she's a bit more aware, she's actually in the documentary, because there is a contrast that I'm trying to portray in the documentary of how privileged we are. And there's a scene, you know, where I say, does only my child deserve footwear and another must walk barefoot? And they show my daughter walking and another walking barefoot. And she knows what's going on. She turned up for the filming, which Oliver Acton and you, Andy, kindly, and you, Chris, kindly donated to the charity, because I couldn't get to India. You know, that's another story altogether. So we did some UK filming. And she's seeing it. She's a part of it. So I'm not constantly talking about it with her. But when I play videos, she's peering over my shoulder. She's watching. Yeah. Mm. I ask her questions. You know, a bit, quite slow. A bit like how I learned design. You know, I used to stand behind my elder brothers, watch them. I'm letting her absorb it. I'm not sitting her down for lessons. And I can see now she'll ask a question. And what I love is sometimes I'll overhear her talking with friends. Oh, my dad's got a charity and this is what they do. And, you know, it's really sweet to hear.
That's so cool.
I know it's happening. Yeah.
That's great. And you were saying, I mean, you were saying it's going out on Amazon Prime. What a coup to get it onto one of the major channels like that. That's incredible.
Yeah. Again, a whole new world for me. So
what was it like pitching, Chaz? Did you sort of have to, how does that whole process work?
We went through an agent and the agent said, it's not going to happen. Netflix, forget about it. Prime, they've just culled hundreds and thousands of shows off their platform to make it high quality. Why don't you release it on Disney Hotstar? I said, what's that? We don't even have that in the UK. And he's like, no, but they have that in... I was like, no, I need the UK audience to see it. He's like, look, you could release it on YouTube. I said, that we're filming a proper film here. And
it's not on it's not on your iPhone.
Yeah.
He's managing my expectations. And I thought to myself, okay, worst case scenario is going to be, I'm going to have to release it on YouTube, worst case scenario, or some obscure platform that no one in the UK has got access to. So I accepted that. And I told the team that, and we were all a bit disappointed. And, you know, even Netflix, for example, Netflix is years of waiting list and only the top directors get access to Netflix. So that was completely out of the question. But the agency I used, they said, look, let us submit something and let's see. It's not like it's not going to happen, but 99.9% of the time you can just forget about it. They're looking for stuff that's going to get viewed a lot. And they pitched it and he called me and he said, Chaz, they have said they're going to take it. And I was like, well, is that guaranteed? And he's like, no, there's a lady, and he gave me her name, and he said she's watched it, and she was quite touched by it, and the way it's been filmed, it's not your typical documentary, which is on an iPhone. I wanted to make it appear like a film, filmed in a film way, but be real. And she really liked it, and she felt the quality of it, because the director's won a lot of awards for his previous work. It's really
got a bit of authority on it. Yeah.
So I said, look, is this a guaranteed yes? And the best way he could put it was, Chaz, it's a bit like when you call the council. You want to make an extension. You ask them a few questions and they say, what's it most likely we'll accept it, but you're going to have to put a planning application. So we're at this stage now.
Right.
We're going to submit it to them. It could still go belly up, but I feel from the conversations it's going to happen. But yeah, good. I was so happy about that. If it happens, I'll be extremely happy.
To me, that sounds like we should be getting some suits for the Cannes Film Festival.
Yeah, I think so.
To be honest, that sounds good enough. Strong enough
speech.
Oh no, that's very, very exciting. Very exciting.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to doing a screening in the UK for all our supporters. So that'll be
good. Be interesting. Yeah,
that'd be really cool. What we'll do as well is if we put in the show notes, we'll add in the links to the charity. Just because, like you said, I know charity works on donations, and I think you've managed to try, and I don't know how you've done it, but you've kept your kind of figure at £28 per wheel, so people can make donations. But for you, I know it's as much about education, informing people, and just highlighting what's going on. So if people can jump on the link to find out a bit more about the charity, that would be good as well.
Absolutely. The more people that know about it, they don't, for me, a donation is also you just sharing it in a family WhatsApp group, you posting on social media. For me, that's equally powerful to donating £28. So we've got people who donate, never seen them in my life, a significant sum, several thousand pounds. And then you've got people who talk about it all the time. And each of those are equally important for a charity to do its work.
Yeah,
definitely. No, get brilliant. It out there. That's brilliant.
What's next for it? What direction are you going in now? So it's established. You've got the network on the ground. Wheels are being delivered. You've got the documentary. Is there another chapter to the same book coming?
It's a bit like a business. Obviously, this is not for profit, but it's a bit like a business. You keep refining it. So right now, our process is we send Narayan, one of our ground team guys, to the village to assess it. Now, if this village is remote, spent a day traveling, day there, we lose contact with him sometimes. So each time we think, is he all right? And then he appears, a really resilient guy. And so he will knock on doors, assess how many families, see if it's a suitable village. And nearly every time it is a suitable village. So it takes a few days, then we plan it, then we deliver those wheels. This whole process takes so much time. So now I'm thinking to cut out that survey altogether. We go with X number of wheels to the village that we've heard about, and we just do it live on the day delivered, saving an earlier trip, which means overall we can do more deliveries. So I'm just trying to refine it like I've refined Digimax, or you've refined Frank Taylor
over
20 years. It's a bit like that. Those little 1% which accumulate.
I can't imagine anyone's going to turn one down, can you?
No.
If you've got a village that hasn't got a water supply that needs to go to it, they're probably going to go, yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah. And even if you end up in a scenario where, with that model, there's a potential risk that you deliver wheels to a village that was perhaps not as needed or as in such a hard position as another village. But if you look at it over an overall project, if that means that by not doing the inspection, the downside to that is that 1 in 20 deliveries might not have ended up in the perfect village. You've still had a massive gain.
You've still done the deliveries.
Because you've got more wheels with more people. And there's always going to be somebody who's in a more desperate situation than somebody else. But if you can just keep helping people in greater numbers, that's a great thing.
Absolutely. I think that the challenge is also how many wheels do you take? Like I said to you, it's very difficult to get to these places. So if it's a village that needs 150 wheels, there has been a time where they had 60 to deliver because we'd run out of stock and the factory wasn't making it fast enough. The team had to make an escape because they were getting mobbed. If you can imagine, hundreds of people surrounding you because there's families of 5, 6, 7. And he said, before we knew it, so many crowds built up and they were shouting, screaming, like, because they don't know that we're going to come back with more. You know, they don't know because they're always getting let down with lies also.
Yeah.
And he said, Ajay said to me, we were actually afraid for our life and I'm never doing this again. Send someone else. Like he was shaken up by it.
My.
I mean, obviously I convinced him with another motivational talk, so he's still with us.
your powers of motivation across the world.
And security.
Yeah. Brilliant, Shaz. It's always good to catch up, and I think the update is great. Honestly, massive congratulations for the documentary. It sounds like it wasn't easy, but what a process to go through and a learning experience for you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me on the show. And, you know, I also want to thank Olive, Drew, you for, you know, when I was meant to go to India to film my part. And I said, and this is important, I get this out there. I didn't want to be in the documentary because I don't feel this is about me. And I'm also... I also prefer to be behind the scenes. And the director said, Chaz, if you're not in it, we've got no documentary because there's enough content out there talking about hardships, but people need to know why you're doing this. So eventually when I agreed to being on camera, and, you know, Sanjay Kapoor, he's a Bollywood star, he's a friend, and he's also an ambassador. He said, Chaz, he's absolutely right. You've got to be in it. So I said, fine, I'm going to fly to India and do this. And my visa got rejected I had an interview with the Indian embassy, and it was a really humiliating experience. He said, have you got links to Pakistan? And I said, yeah, my dad was born in pre-Pakistan India, and then he moved after the partition. So I said, not really. And he was like, you do have a link and you've not been honest in your form. I said, how's that link? And he said, you are connected. I was like, okay, technically, yeah. But okay, how do we move on from here? I'm rejecting your visa. And they hold your passport for 3 months. And, you know, all that bureaucracy and all those politics. And I'm sure it's happening on both sides. It was disheartening, especially since it was a trip for the charity. So when I shared this with you, Andy, and you'll remember this clearly, he said, don't worry, we're going to film it for you and we're going to film it here. And honestly, it was a blessing in disguise because how comfortable I was able to get on camera because of Oliver's approach and the setup, etc. I may not have got that with unknown people in another country.
It's funny how things turn out.
It is. I'm so happy this actually happened.
But also, arguably, it potentially might be a richer documentary by actually showing a Western setting and a Western experience with the desperate poverty of villages in India. You know, you get that visual juxtaposition between the two. Whereas if you'd have been out there and it'd all been Indian based, you wouldn't have had that crossover.
Absolutely. And I wouldn't be able to get my daughter into the documentary as well to show that, look, I am a father. There's a reason behind this. So it all had a happy ending, but it really did come down to me being with a comfortable video crew who knew what they're doing. And Oliver pulled out all the stops. He chose a location. I mean, I just had to turn up. And so I just want to say thank you to FTA Media and you for that.
Oh, appreciate it. Appreciate it. No, looking forward to coming to the screening of it.
Yeah, it'll be exciting. Yeah.
You, even though you're a returning guest, you don't get away scot-free. You still need to answer our two questions, because that would mean that it'll be our first of not asking these questions that we didn't ask you. So we will. So the first one is, if you could be a fly on the wall in a situation.
Bit of a roundabout, didn't it?
Yeah. That's a long run up.
That was a long run up. I know what's going to happen.
So if you could be a fly on the wall in a situation, where would you be and who would that be with if you were given the opportunity? Doesn't need to be related to the charity, just a situation. Yeah, where would you like to be?
Okay, this is a really good question. The UK dentistry is so toxic, and sometimes, you know, it takes years to develop real, true friendships like you and I have got. I would love to be in a room, you know, which I've entered, and then I leave and just see how people speak about me. Because
I can tell you, you always leave early. You want to know?
Yeah, because that tells you what people are like. And, you know, it's amazing what people will say. And, you know, if they're saying good things, for me, reputation and how I am and for me to be perceived correctly is important. So I'd love to hear, because people always say to me, oh, Shaz, everyone says nice things about you. You never hear it. I would love to hear what is exactly said.
Next event,
that'd be interesting.
Next event we're at, we're writing them down for you on my phone.
Yeah,
and I'll give it feedback when next out for dinner.
I tell you that you actually started this, and I think the closest I've ever seen it being lived out in real life was when we did the episode with Munis Iqbal. And Munis was quite nervous about coming on and being a guest. So we recorded it and it went out. And when the episode went live, you posted a link on Facebook and said, Munis is a really good guy. This is what he's done for me. Has anybody else got any other stories or experience of how Munis has helped them? And there were 60 or 70 comments of people saying things, you know, directly to Munis, where he'd helped out and where he'd helped. And I guess it's that kind of thing where he got to hear the things that quite often people only hear once they're dead.
I was going to say, it's a bit like, would you want to be at your own funeral to see, one, who turned up, and two, if they said nice things about you?
He was moved by that, because we all got to see, because I'm only seeing what he's done for me. Like, he said, oh, let's meet up. He didn't tell me he's driving 2.5 hours to see me after a clinic and two and a half hours back. It's only when I probed, where are you coming from? So he's doing lots of things for people in lots of different scenarios. And there was like 60 people saying, Munis did this for me.
Yeah.
And he was really moved. So was his family, because he showed his mum, I think. It's similar in that way, because, you know, for me, business is important, but not from a financial perspective. It's from an impact perspective. And now the charity allows me to do that in a more whole sense. You never really know, are you doing it right? Because it's all new. Charity's new, documentary's new. I'm learning on the job. It's not 20 years of business learning. I'm going to make mistakes.
Yeah. That's good. And our last question is, if you can meet somebody, who would you like to meet, given the opportunity?
Alive or dead?
Either.
It's an exact moment as the bus hits them.
Yeah, you start if they're alive, and then you've met them when they're
dead. Yeah, and you can even go. You can either go a real personal fictional. Whatever takes your fancy.
So Dalai Lama. No, I'm joking. Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs has been a huge inspiration for me. I say to the team when they come to move an idea, or even if I'm presenting an idea, what would Steve Jobs do? You know, it's so difficult to simplify the complicated. Simplicity is harder to design than something complicated with lots of bells and whistles. If you apply that concept to business, which I've tried to do in Digimax and every avenue of it, I just feel like this man was able to change the world. What might his mind be like? And I think many entrepreneurs, including yourself, you'd be able to relate to this. Wouldn't you love to talk to him and ask him questions about things that we struggle with, and how do you come up with these ideas, and you know, how do you deal with people holding back and saying you can't do it? Because he's achieved so much. It's they're not a tech company; it's a lifestyle company, because we can't live without these products. So yeah, it would be Steve Jobs.
Yeah, that's good. Okay. Interesting. Very good one. Chaz, thank you.
As always,
it's been so much fun. It always is. And like I say, I wish you all the luck in the world when the documentary comes out.
Thank you very much.
Genuinely looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, definitely.
Not at all. Genuinely looking forward to seeing it. And I'm sure people take a lot from this. But if you could let us have the links, we'll definitely drop those in the show notes so people can have a little click around and find out a bit more.
Wonderful. And you guys are doing a great job. Thank you for bringing this to dentistry, because I don't think there's any podcasts out there like this. So I want to see it continue to go from strength to strength. Well done.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah. And just remember, everybody, it's £28. £28 for a wheel.
Yes. Exactly. Lovely. Cheers, Chaz.
Thank you. Take care.
Cheers, mate. Cheers, Chaz. Thanks, man.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Dentology, where we discuss the business of dentistry. If you like what you heard, please do subscribe where you found this episode. That would be amazing. And also follow us on Instagram.